Well, I mean, you have to do. What do people say that if you having a good season, well, then you forget about everything.
Yeah.
But then what about the guys who are not having good season?
True.
You know, be at the ballpark like everybody else. You know.
Yeah.
Those guys are the one that is tough for them. Yeah.
No. Is this? I suppose everybody. You know, we're talking about men who played baseball for a living rather than baseball players. Is this something that it's tough not to take home with you when the season is going bad, or is this everybody handles it different depending on who they
are? Yeah, I think everybody, handles it, a little different.
Yeah.
Because I remember Dick Gratis used to say that the little round thing, white thing, yeah, will make an alcoholic out of you if you let it.
Yeah. And it has with people, too. Yeah.
So a lot of people handle, the thing, a little different.
Yeah. I'm like any other person with a stressful job.
Very much
and it
so.
Can be a stressful
That's
job.
Right. That's
yeah.
Right.
I mean, you're there in front of thousands of people. All the years I've done my job, I didn't have thousands of people watching me.
Yeah, well, but any kind of job would be a stressful, to a certain extent. Yeah.
Okay, now, after that, Boston, 275, 18 home runs, 93 RB at 19. How did you end up in Houston then?
Well, I hurt my arm at the beginning of 66.
Okay.
And I was playing with the B team in Lakeland somewhere.
This was in spring training with the Sox?
Yeah, with the Red Sox.
Okay.
And I couldn't throw. Hmm. I mean, this year was really bad. I couldn't throw. I couldn't, every time if I breathe hard, it was hurting.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, my shoulder was hurting. I couldn't swing. So, the Red Sox decided, it's time to unload him, and they traded me to Houston. I didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
We were playing a big game that day. And when I got back, Dennis Bennett said, "Have you heard?" I said, "What? You've been traded."
Oh, so he heard it.
He heard it.
I said, "No, yeah."
So I said, "Okay." So I went, with Houston. And I remember the following day, Houston was playing the Braves. Next to the game. So I look at the lineup, and here I am. I'm playing third, a hidden four. I said, I wonder,
Now, the manager there was
Grady Hatton.
Grady Hatton.
And I asked Grady, how come you're not in the lineup? Said, well, you're playing. I said, well, didn't Boston tell you, that my shoulder, I can't even swing.
Yeah.
I haven't had, no spring training, really, because I can't swing. He said, they didn't tell us that.
Mm. They forgot.
Yeah, well, but I wound up with this.
Wow. So, and did not have the best year of your life, but that arm just kept bothering you the whole time?
Yeah, because I was in the DL for about 2 months.
Oh, wow.
I never had a spring training the whole year.
Mm. So you never really got started.
No. So Houston asked me, they wanted me to stay with the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And Houston has the A1 organization.
Is that right?
At that particular time.
Yeah.
Yes. But I said, I want to play, maybe 1 year, 2 more years.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted me to be part of the organization, And I want, my release so I can go somewhere else.
And that's how then
and that's where I wound
Cubs.
Up in Chicago.
It's not the same, I would guess it's not the same playing when you're 30 and when you're playing when you're 19, huh? I mean...
Well, there were some games, I played with Houston where I hit a ground ball off the sidearm. It used to be with Philly. He's a politician.
Jim Bunning. Yeah.
Jim Bunning. And the ground ball is in third and short. And years before, I could have beaten out. And it seemed like it took me about a half an hour to go from home to first.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm getting
old.
Yeah.
Was it hard to leave the game after Chicago, or did you kind of know and?
Well, I knew because, my legs were hurt.
Yeah.
My shoulders still hurt. People were telling me, "Well, why don't you go to Japan?" I said, "That's too far for me to go, get released. I'd rather stay here in the States."
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't that hard. Yeah, I quit, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you do? What did you do after?
Oh, I went to Canada.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
No kidding.
Some league in Canada.
Oh.
About 2 years after, a year after. They offered me, you know, some money there. I said, okay, you know, so I went to that league in... I played the first few games, but then my leg was hurt. Then the manager got fired. They made me the manager, you know, and we finished second. We were there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, they wanted me to be a player manager, you know.
Yeah.
So I told them that I can't manage, you know, but I can't play anymore. He said, no, because the roster is only 17 players, you know.
Mm.
So we don't need you taking the spot of, you know, a guy who can play every day.
So that, well, that was it.
That was it.
What did you do then?
I came back here to Milwaukee.
No. Yeah. How come Milwaukee, of all places that...
Well, because this is where I started, you know.
Yeah.
I bought a house, you know, 56, same year I came here.
Okay.
So I stayed here.
Yeah.
Yeah, until now.
Felix, I'm glad you did.
This is a good city. This is a good city.
Now, who is... one of the questions I asked Don, it was interesting. I said, who are some of the best, easiest pitchers for you to hit off of? And one for him, it was Sandy Koufax. And I said, who was the toughest? He said, Bob Veal. So it didn't make any difference. I mean, most people can say, who is the guy you'd some of the guys you'd rather see pitching out there that you knew you could?
Well, I used to hit Louis Tien pretty well.
Is that right?
Yeah. And now he was a great pitcher.
Sure he was.
But
yeah.
I used to see him there and say, well, I'm going to give me two or three of us. Because I used to hit him pretty good.
Senior. Huh?
Yeah, I hit him pretty good. Of the other guys, you know, like, I wasn't playing regular at that time, you know,
yeah,
with the Braves, so everybody was tough for me at that time. Yeah.
Well, I've got to, before we go, I'm going to show you one of the guys in the organization prepares. He's got this on everybody who ever played the game, compared your statistics against every other second baseman who's ever played. And I'll show it to you because you'll feel good about it.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Who are some of the real tougher? You said everybody, but there's probably some worse than others.
Some of the tougher pitchers, I think Gibson.
Yeah. Oh, he had, was he as intimidating as people said he
was?
Yes,
with a nasty slide.
Hmm.
Very nasty slide. We used to tell Hank, I said, why don't you bring a chair, put it up by the home plate, because you're going to be going.
Yeah.
You're going to be sitting there anyway.
Could Hank hit him?
He used to hit him pretty decent. Yeah, pretty decent.
Of course, he hit everybody kind of decent.
Yeah.
Favorite...
and another guy, top pitcher, Sam Jones. He used to be with the Cubs.
Toothpick Jones?
Toothpick Jones.
Is that right?
What
was tough about him?
His curveball.
Ah.
One of the meanest curveball of all time.
Wow.
I heard Blylevin used to have, you know, one.
Yeah.
And Maloney from Cincinnati used to have a good
one.
I faced him. Camilo Pascual was a great one. But I think Sam Jones was the best of them all.
Now, again, you're talking to a guy, I think I mentioned I struck out 13 times in 17. But what's the toughest part of the curveball is it looks like it's coming right at you. It breaks in.
Well, with Sammy, we used to call it a double curveball. Because, you know, when you're hitting a curveball, the curveball you see, but it would break, you know, sharp or whatever.
It wasn't there.
But with Sammy, it seemed like it was going to hang all of a sudden, you know, break. I used to call it a double curveball. Yeah.
Were you a guess hitter, or were you, I guess?
Everybody's a guess hitter.
Yeah.
Whoever tells you they isn't lying.
Well, you know, I didn't realize as a non-player what a mind game it is between a pitcher and a batter.
That's right.
I mean, every,
the pitcher has to guess too. You know, I mean, what you're looking for. You
know?
Now you're guessing what he's going to throw you.
Yeah.
By the time when you see guys throwing away, you know they're coming inside. A lot of times they don't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you're still at the ball.
That's
off.
Right. Yeah.
Let's see. We talked about that. Toughest pitchers. Yeah, what were you? You said Fenway was one of your favorite parks.
Yes.
What was their toughest park?
Houston.
Really? I guess Houston is a pitcher's park anyway. It always has.
They offer them. Yes.
In fact, it says. Let's see. Where's the? Yeah. The average hitter hits 93% well in Houston.
Is that right?
Yeah. So you lose 7% right off the top.
Yeah.
What was tough about Houston?
I don't know. The ball didn't seem to care.
Ah.
I mean, there's some shots there, you know, the ball just died, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe it was covered, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the ball didn't travel that well.
Did you have a favorite umpire or least favorite?
Dusty Bogus.
Yeah, he was the favorite or the least favorite?
Not my favorite.
No, what did you like about him?
I hope, you know, I'm pronouncing it right. B-O-G-G-S.
I know who you mean, yeah.
Because we're playing out here at the stadium, and he missed this play a sec. So I told him, Dusty, what are you doing? You guys out. Then he looked at me and said, Felix, what do you want me to do? I missed the play.
Oh, really?
You don't argue, okay?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's it.
Class.
Yeah, man.
Rather than having to be defensive and say,
or
to get mad at you or something. Yeah.
He said, I'm missing. I said, okay.
Is there a big difference in quality of umpires, or are they all pretty good?
They're all pretty good.
Yeah. They'll blow it once in a while.
I think the ones now, maybe the difference now, they want a confrontation, you know.
Yeah,
some of
them
do, you know. But otherwise, yeah, they're pretty good umpires.
You know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, too, are you a baseball fan today?
I keep, you know, I follow, you know, the teams that I play with, you know, that I used to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I follow the Red Sox. I play, you know, the Houston Astros, you know, and the Braves, you know.
Yeah.
Even though I never played in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's such a, what are the big differences you see in the game today? You know, you were talking about complete games and the way they lose. Yeah, there was no closers when there was such things.
Well,
what about the players today?
I think some of the guys, you know, much stronger, you know, than the players from maybe 40, 50 years ago. But I think there were some great players, you know, the time that we played.
Oh, they sure were.
That's right.
Well, you know, I remember they played the All-Star game in Milwaukee. I forgot what year it was, but I got to see on the same field. Now, Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays and Eddie Matthews and Stan Musial and Yogi Berra, they were all on the same field, and I was one
That's
of
right.
the highlights of my life, all playing at the same time.
That's right.
And you got to play against all those guys.
Sure. Remember the 57 or 58 World Series against the Yankees?
Yeah. Oh,
with
great.
Berra and Mantle and Mary and Eddie Matthews and Hank, you know, Burdett, Spine, you know. That's a great bunch right there.
You played with some of the best.
That's right.
What... Eddie Matthews, you know, I saw a picture, well, it was on a cover of the magazine that we gave away at that Sabre.
Uh-huh.
Really good, he could have been a movie star. And I understand at the end he looked like he was 80 years old. I know, and he was in a terrible, terrible accident with the boat and everything. Was a lot of that, and I don't, you know, if you'd rather not talk about that, it's okay too. You know, he did not have a happy life.
I don't know, you know, about his his life though.
The drinking thing. And if you'd rather not talk about that, that's okay too. But he just had lots and lots of problems, I guess. But who were we can talk about Hank Aaron, and so much has been written about Hank and about Spawny and all those guys, but. It sounds like even that you had to admire those guys as almost as a fan in a way, what they could do.
With Hank, you know, I remember, you know, the Hank was supposed to go to the Puerto Rican League, but he was supposed to go with a team called, named Santurce team. But I told him, you know, hold it, you know, because I play with a different team. I play with the Cowboys team. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna ride the Cowboys team because you want to go over there, and I want you to write a little note that you want to play for this team.
Okay.
And he said, okay.
Oh yeah.
So I said, who told you about the Santurce team? He said, well, it's a guy named Buzz Clarkson.
Sure. He was one of the first black players in the majors. Yeah.
And he was managing, you know, the Santurce team.
Okay.
I said, well, that's okay, you know. We have, you know, some good people in Caguas, you know. So he wrote a little note, and the people in Caguas, they were surprised. They said, he wants to come over here?
Hmm.
I said, yeah. So,
that was through you. Didn't he play there, huh?
Sure, and he won the batting title.
What a surprise.
Yeah. And we won the championship of the league, and then we won the Caribbean Series in San Juan.
Did you play winter ball every year?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And you were still in, that's a lot of games to play during.
That's right.
I remember watching the Cuban League when I was a kid, too. They always had some
great teams.
Who were some of the players that you played with in the Cuban League that never, really great players that never made it to the big leagues?
Hard to say because, I can't recall some of the guys now. But I remember, like Minnie Reynoso, played many years there.
Yeah.
And Chipo Fernandez played in the big league. But some of the other guys, I can't recall. Hmm.
Did you ever get thrown out of a game?
A couple of them, in the big league, yeah, a couple of them. Augie Donatelli was one. They threw me one. I saw Augie, we played an all-timers game in Pittsburgh. That was about 7-10 years ago. And Augie was there. I didn't know he lives around Pittsburgh.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, I think he died, whatever.
That was, let's see, I think I've got, here's, good old-fashioned baseball. If you had it to do all over again, would you do anything different?
Not really. I think I had a, pretty good life,
Yeah.
Well, pretty good baseball life. The years I played in my hometown and all the years I played in the Puerto Rican League and all the years I played in the United States,
Enjoyed everything?
I wouldn't change.
You know something, Felix? I never had anybody give me a different answer than that.
Yeah, I wouldn't change that at all.
Because, you guys did what all of us little boys wanted to do.
Sure, yeah. That's what everybody wants to do.
Even, when I mentioned Ray Barry's before, Ray is about 92 now, and he's almost embarrassed about his major league career. I think in a lifetime, he had 220. But I said, Ray, you did what we all wanted to do. Let's see. What did you usually do during the off season? I know one year you worked with Don, working with kids, with Don Pavlovich. He told me about that.
Now, when I'm after retire, I fish a lot. I like to fish.
Is that what you usually did during the off season? Sure. Just took it easy and relaxed.
Yeah, well now I even take my wife because my wife loves to fish.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she's very calm. She take her time, and she would stay there for hours and hours.
Oh, that's
she wouldn't complain about anything. She just like to fish.
Oh, that's nice. That's you got a rare
catch.
Right.
That's right.
I read and I couldn't pin it. What is the Felix Mantilla Baseball League?
It's in the South Side. And it's still going strong.
Yeah?
Yeah?
Now tell me about it, because I don't know much, I couldn't find much information on it.
It's been around about 20-some years. Now with more kids, playing than, years ago.
Yeah.
So now they even have, T-ball or whatever. And they're using my name, and I went to see a couple games this year, and the league is pretty good.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Pretty good.
So it lives on.
That's right. I hope so. I hope they keep it up.
Yeah. Well, I just got to tell you how much I appreciate this.
Thank you.
I don't know how many people ask you to do this or not. Did that fellow ever call you about that? He said he's writing a book about the 62 Mets. His name is Ty Waterman. He was.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. He did call you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. He said he had talked to a couple of the guys. I don't know how successful he's been with the rest of them or not, but.
Yeah, it's hard because, a lot of times you get, a lot of people, to interview for this and that.
Well, it's kind of surprised me. I know the day I was with Don, he went to the mailbox and he still gets autograph requests. Do you still?
I get bunches.
Huh.
Yeah. But my wife's the one to take care of.
It's nice that you weren't forgotten.
Yeah.
I wanted to show you this. This is a little bit down here. This is... You were up 3,027 times at bat, plate appearances. This is what you did. This is the average for a second baseman who was up the same number of times.
Mm-hmm.
The average, let's see, where are some of these are strange. Oh, here. For example, the average second baseman during your career hit .254, you at .261. Average slugging average for a second baseman was .349, yours was .403. Oh. Average on base percentage for second base was .316. Yours was .329. And they've got a formula for figuring. It's kind of like an earned run average for hitters.
Uh-huh.
And the average second baseman produced 3.8 runs a game. You produced 4.58.
Pretty good.
Darn right. So there's another free. Right. So I don't know if you ever thought of yourself, but that's that says you're about 20% above average hitter.
Yeah, it was especially in the years that I played regular, because the 6 years I played in, I wasn't a regular player.
Yeah.
But the 3 years I played regular, one in New York and twice with the Red Sox, I hit.
Take that to the and that, but then the injury. Hit, and that's kind of unfortunate timing. I'd say it might be something. I just give you the stuff and you can do what you want with it, but it was interesting. I don't know if you ever want to feel good about the stuff. Just go to the computer and type in Felix Mantilla and you get all kinds of pages. I tried that with Bill Stevens, didn't get anything. Where was another one here? Oh, yeah. This is just kind of, I forget who did this, but that's just kind of a summary. And they have your 1958 Topps cards.
We got everything in here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I see you haven't changed a bit. I don't think there's anything else on there that you don't already have. But. Oh, this is from the Mets database. Yeah. 95 game. You played third, short, and second that year.
Yeah, I didn't play outfield, I think.
Yeah, did you play center field when you played the outfield, or were you...
For the Braves.
Yeah.
Not for the Red Sox.
No. Did you enjoy playing the outfield, or was that just something you did that...
Yeah, I was telling... it was Errol Wilson one day. I was sitting and said, I don't enjoy this particular game that we were playing. We have a doubleheader against the Yankees at Fenway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm playing center. And the Yankees had Maris and Tresh and Kube.
They could hit.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
And Dennis Bennett, started with us. But he had a bad arm. And every time I go, left center, they were hitting right center. Yeah. I go right center, they hit left center. I come in, they hit it on my head. I go back, they blew it.
You were tired.
I mean, 22 hits, I think, that particular afternoon.
You were
And this is just in the first game.
Get me back to shortstop.
That's right. That's an error. I want to go back second here.
How many miles you ran that day?
That's right.
Who are some of the nicest people that you played with and against? I mean, really.
I had a bunch of people. They're pretty nice. I can say.
I won't ask you about the bad guys.
But well,
I'll tell you the one guy that Don Pavlovich said he really didn't get. It's Bill Lee from the.
Oh,
the
left
spaceman.
I don't know him. I don't know him. But most of the guys here in Milwaukee, they're real decent people.
Yeah. I had this. Before our convention. I had talked to you just for a moment. You said about coming to, and you used to talk to Johnny. Mm-hmm. I had the most unforgettable 10-minute conversation with Johnny Hogan in my life. I'd had no idea what he was talking about, and he was driving around in circles, and we finally worked out it. I tell you what I appreciated about him, though, is all the credit he gives to, he's really a funny guy, but he gave credit to you for his success, because you pushed him. He gives credit to everybody, and it's sincere too. I mean, he really
is a good guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah, yeah. But, do you hear from any of the old Braves anymore, or are they?
No, because I saw Pizarro this year on a card show here in Milwaukee.
Ah.
Well, that was like the first time I've seen Pizarro in years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he lives in the capital in Puerto Rico. I live in, my family lives in the northwest part of the island.
On the coast.
So we don't see each other.
Yeah. Now, he's another guy who did better after he left.
That's right. He won a lot of games with the White Sox.
Yeah. I was sorry to see, it's got to be tough anyway, Bob Buell dying along with Eddie. I saw Bob one time 10 years ago, and he had aged a lot too.
Yeah.
But I guess not you and
well,
I.
No, we're still young.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But I don't see too many of the guys run, except Logan. You know, I see him. You know.
Yeah.
Quite often.
Yeah.
But the rest of the guys, I don't see.
No, you're pretty active in that. Are you as active as Johnny is in that Braves?
Yeah, we're involved in that. Yeah. Yeah. So we have a banquet now in October.
Ah.
Another one. This is the second one.
Yeah.
The first one was great.
No, I'll have to check. Did it surprise you, the response you got?
Yes. Yeah, because we have right now, and we just started last year, over 500 and some members.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right.
And that was a long time ago.
That's right. Oh. I was surprised. You know, I never thought, you know, we were going to take off like this.
Yeah.
And the banquet was a sellout.
And, you know, I don't think you'll ever get that response to the Brewers.
Maybe not.
You'll ever get it.
There's still a lot of fans, you know, for Braves fans, you know, the old Braves.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. I was so angry when that happened.
Mickey Owen was the manager for the Cowboys team. And he took a look at Hank playing second, and he told him, you know, you are going to right. Because the Cowboys
team... Is he the guy that converted him to...
Yeah.
Is that right?
Because Hank was getting ready to be released. Because he didn't look too good, you know, feeling the ball.
Yeah.
And he wasn't hitting that well at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Puerto Rican League...
Now, when was this in relation to his minor league days?
That was right after the Jacksonville
season. Okay.
He went with us to the Cowboys.
Okay.
Because I recommended him.
Yeah.
And they were getting ready to Canada. So I had to talk to one of the owners of the team, you know, give him a chance, mm-hmm. you know. And then Mickey Owen... Send him to right field.
Ah.
Mickey was the first guy to move.
Okay, he was a good right fielder too.
Yeah. Because Mickey didn't have all the choice, you know, because people were getting on his case, because the guy can't play second, and he wasn't hitting too well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you salvaged his career. Do you
That's
ever
right.
remind him of that?
He tells everybody.
Yeah.
Just got through.
Is that right?
Yeah. He tells.
Well, I met him one time at a banquet, and I wanted to make sure that I saw Hank Aaron get his first. See, that's how we fans get our goodies. I saw Hank Aaron get his very first hit. And he said, yeah, his first game in Cincinnati went 0-for-4, and then he came back, and I think he went 1-for-4 his first game. So I can say I saw Hank Aaron get his first. But Joe Torre, too. Remember, he came in and pinch hit for somebody when he was... But a lot of good memories. I remember Chuck Tanner, his first... You were probably in the minors then, but his first time at bat with the Braves, he had a home run. Well, I was at the very first game, too, when... Billy Bruton hit that home run off of Slaughter's glove. Of course, 800,000 people were at that one too, but I was.
All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay.
I really appreciate it, Felix.
Okay.
That's
okay.
To ignore all policies that make it more difficult to service your customers. We've probably got too many policies the way it is. Let people know that the most important thing in your organization is getting the job done for the customer, not obeying policies. Idea number 7. Begin everyone's job description with these words. I make customers for, and then fill in the name of your organization, by. Because ultimately, that is every team member's job. Whether you're a bookkeeper, whether you're a janitor, whether you're a driver, whether you're a doctor, no matter what your position, your ultimate goal is to create customers. Now, would you fast forward the rest of the side and then turn to side 2, 73 ways to delight your customers. Welcome back to side two. Let's start with idea number 9 in how to pay attention internally to delighting your customers. Make sure that everybody, your maintenance people, your warehouse people, your delivery people, your clerical people, everybody has a set of their own business cards. Not only does it make them feel a sense of ownership of your organization, but those people are out there passing out those cards and letting people know that you exist and doing it from a positive frame of reference. Help them feel that they are an important part of your customer service team. Idea number 10, start every single meeting that you hold in your organization. Start every agenda with customer service issues. Again, it dramatically illustrates the importance that you place on customer service in your organization. Idea number 11, never, 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 ever take any action of any kind without first asking this question: how will this affect our customers? About a year ago, my wife and I went down to Florida, and I forgot to pack my shorts. And it was going to be very, very warm in Florida, unlike Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where we live. And after my wife and I discussed who should have packed my shorts, I lost. She decided to go to the local shop and buy myself a pair of shorts. Since I wasn't along, she didn't know the exact size, and she asked the clerk whether she could return them in case they were the wrong size. The clerk replied, "Certainly you may. We'll be glad to give you a credit if they don't fit." Now she said, "Wait a minute. I don't want a credit. We don't really live here. We'll be leaving in a couple of weeks. What I'd like is my money back." And he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. We can't do that. It's against policy." And when she asked the question, "Why?" they said, "Well, we want people to make up their minds before they leave our shop." Now what they did was tell her what they wanted. Their own convenience was obviously their number one priority. They did not ask the question, how will this policy affect our customers? Idea number 12. Make sure that everyone in your organization, every team member, takes a customer service course and make sure that they pass. Idea number 13. Emphasize customer service in your annual report, whether you're a small company or large. Publish service data as well as financial data. By emphasizing customers as the first item of business in your annual report, you will give the message again to all of your stakeholders, team members, customers, that there's one group that always comes first. Idea number 14. Sell the service concept over and over and over every single day. Make it come alive for people. Help them see it. Help them hear it. Help them feel it. Help them taste it. Help them smell it. Make it pervading. Make your place reek of customer service when anybody walks in the door. If it helps, buy t-shirts or caps or whatever else you have to do. You see, there's a danger in starting on customer service. The danger is this, that once you commit yourself, once your vision is about the customer, you can never, ever stop. And the day you stop emphasizing it is the day they stop doing it. And you're going to have to come up regularly with new ideas and new ways to make it fresh and alive. Idea number 15. Read the same literature that your customers read. Attend the same trade association meetings. Send your team members and associates to those trade meetings. Have them regularly talk to customers. Idea number 16. Nobody can lose a customer faster than your receptionist and the people who answer the phone. Make sure that they all have training in answering that phone, and while you're at it, make sure that everyone in your organization takes and passes that same course. Idea number 17. Bit of a controversial one here. Consider docking the commission of the salesperson every single time you lose a customer, no matter who the original salesperson was. Make sure that your sales staff understands that servicing the account is just as important as getting it in the first place. Idea number 18. Have your sales department send you daily lost account reports. Bring your salespeople in once a month to discuss those reports and those numbers. Idea number 19. Combine the sales and service functions into one. So often we have a group out there selling and a group out there servicing. Make sure that the salespeople understand the service aspect, and that is one of their key responsibilities. Idea number 20. Decide that your commitment is not to each individual sale, but your commitment is to a lifetime of quality service for each customer. One of the dangers and risks in any business is that you see each sale as a particular unit, a beginning and an end. It is never the end. The end is a lifetime of quality service and quality products. Idea number 21. Devise 5 measures of customer service for each of your most important products or services. Consult with your customers, consult with your production and salespeople, and then pick the best measure. Then, in the next 6 months, using that measure, double your level of quality. Idea number 22. Teach your sales representatives formal problem-solving skills and change their job description from selling to solving customer problems. After all, the key job of any person who represents you is to solve customer problems. Idea number 23, give all of your associates a product training course. Generally, we limit those to sales professionals and sometimes the production people. The bookkeeper must know about the product that he or she represents. The janitor must know. Everybody in your organization must know that product. Help them to understand the advantages. Help them understand how it contributes to their customer's well-being. Idea number 24. Get ridiculous about quality. Paint everything so it looks fresh and clean. Don't allow a typo. Don't allow any paper on the floor. Make your organization reek of quality. Provide a quality environment for your entire team to work in. Idea number 25. Send your team out quarterly to see, touch, fondle, smell, and listen to your competitors' products in the marketplace. Find out what they do better than you do, and then brainstorm how you can top them. One organization we heard of simply piles people in a van, maybe 5 or 6 people once a month, drops them off at all of their competitors' locations, has them identify one thing that that competitor does better than they do. Then they come back and they meet and they hold a contest, and a prize is awarded to the team member who comes up with the best idea obtained from a competitor's advantage. Idea number 26. Develop a formal customer service and quality comparison with your competitors' products or services. Compare and evaluate each week or even each day if that's practical. Idea number 27. Whenever you have a complaint or a problem with a customer, red flag their folder. Make sure that they get extra special attention the next time you have an opportunity to serve them. Idea number 28. Over-respond to even minor customer problems regardless of short-term cost to you. Remember, you are in a lifetime business. Now, the key to over-responding is simply to make sure that that customer notices your over-response. Do not take it for granted that they've seen it. Make sure that you remind them that you have gone out of your way. And idea number 29, hold an annual awards dinner for the customer of the year or for your customers of the year. Everybody likes to be recognized and acknowledged. Help them gain some incentive for being one of those customers for you. Well, our next set of ideas has to do with rewarding customer service. I believe it's a basic truth that what gets rewarded gets done. If you're truly and passionately dedicated to serving your customers, make sure that your team members are recognized and rewarded for doing that. Mary Kay Ash of Mary Kay Cosmetics said the two things that people want more than sex or money are acknowledgement and recognition. Now, that may be your value and may not be your value, but believe me, people will work to do the things that you'd like them to do. Idea number one, tie bonus compensation to your measure of customer satisfaction. The more satisfied customers say they are, the higher the bonus. Idea number two, let your associates know how you feel every single time they do something that gives extraordinary service to the customer, and then reward them at small ceremonies. One of the things I've always liked about the book, The 1 Minute Manager, was the idea of catching people in the act of doing something right. Look for opportunities. Look for people stretching to go above and beyond for the customer. Make sure you notice, and again, set up a small ceremony to reward those valuable people. Idea number three, award a gold ring of service for extraordinary contributions to customer service. Interestingly enough, I got that idea from another company not too far from our office. Now, every year, they awarded 7 people out of 300 the gold ring of quality. The ring had a value of approximately $150, kind of depending on the price of gold during that particular year. Now, they offered each recipient the opportunity to receive the ring or a check for $500. Not once in the 8 years that they offered that particular award did anybody ever ask for the check. Why? Because a check goes into the purse or pocket or wallet or bank account. But the ring, one of 7 that existed in the world, was worn in a visible way that everybody could see it, which also motivated other people to want to get that ring for themselves. It's not about the money, it's about recognition. Idea number four, award a prize to the staff member turning in the best new idea heard from a customer during that particular month. Idea number five, install a group bonus based on reduced customer turnover. Turn them loose on the goal, let them know what you want, have them find a way to do it, and reward accordingly. Okay, let's move to our next subject, how to stay in touch with your customers in an extraordinary way that you'll stand out from the crowd. Idea number one, publish a 2-page bi-monthly or quarterly informal newsletter. Doesn't have to be typeset. Typing is just fine. 2 pages are fine. Does not have to be on slick paper. Simply tell them what you're doing to improve your service, what new products are available to them through you, new ideas that you're considering, problems you're working on, new people who will help you give them even better customer service. Idea number two, send out 100 cards a month. Send out birthday cards, St. Patrick's Day cards, Victoria Day cards, whatever. Make sure that each customer hears from you 5 to 6 times a year. Now, in case you're concerned about the cost, please remember that the standard figure these days is that it costs you 6 times more to get a new customer than to retain an old one. Idea number three, send a personal letter to each new account telling them how glad you are to have them as a customer. Have a lot of people from throughout the organization sign it. Idea number four, send out handwritten thank you notes to both new and veteran customers. Idea number five, send newsletters, birthday cards, news clippings, walk-around visits, and phone calls. Use any excuse to stay in touch. Whatever you need to do to touch that customer, do it. Next, we come to our miscellaneous category. Just a few additional ideas to help you delight your customers that don't seem to come under any particular category. Idea number one, treat your suppliers the same way you do your best customers. Hold a supplier appreciation day. Ask how you can become a better customer of theirs. What does this have to do with customer service? Your suppliers are key figures in helping you meet your customers' needs. Show that you appreciate them. Idea number two, set up an internship program in manufacturing for all of your salespeople. Help them understand the quality that goes into your product. Idea number three, always acknowledge your mistakes. Ask the customer how to make it good, how to do it regardless of short-term cost. What are all of the things that you can possibly do to make sure that that mistake will never happen again? Now, does that mean that you'll get a guarantee that it will never happen again? Obviously not. What it will mean is that the probabilities of that error happening again will be entirely minimized. Idea number four. Tell your customers how they can help you give them better service. You know, oftentimes customers engage in blocking behavior and have procedures and ways of doing business that makes it much more difficult to work with them than other customers. Let them know how they can help you do a better job for them. Idea number five. A friend of mine in St. Louis has a kitchen and bath store. His store is very busy because he does a super job with customers. If you enter Tom's store, the first thing that you will see in his very busy store is a sign that says, "Welcome to our store. We apologize for not being able to serve you immediately, but if you're patient, we'll be glad to offer you the exact same in-depth service and attention that we're paying to those people ahead of you right now." Now, all Tom is saying with that sign is, we recognize that nobody likes to wait, and he's converted it into something very, very positive simply by paying attention to those people. And now we come to miscellaneous idea number six. There's a bank in Japan that if you walk in on a crowded day, a clerk will take your paperwork, deliver it to the teller's group, and then guide you over to their waiting room that is filled with television, magazines, flowers, and tea. And there you wait and relax while the teller processes that paperwork. When it's completed, the clerk returns it to you. Simply a way to recognize that people do not like to wait in lines and a way to stand out from the crowd from all of the other times that you and I have stood in lines. Isn't it better to relax and read a magazine? Well, there you have it. You know, I hope you get the impression that all customer service is doing a lot of little things that you didn't really have to do. You know, in my seminars, I regularly ask people, what have other suppliers of theirs done to stand out for them, to get them to return to that supplier over and over and over again? And you know what they tell me? The things that get them to return over and